Good morning. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and it is sometime 24th. Is that right? Mm-hmm. It is February the 24th, and this is the last scheduled meeting for this subcommittee. So I'll start off by thanking all of you for participating and helping us through this difficult short session. And we're going to start with House Bill 4086. I would open a work session on House Bill 4086.
Okay, Mr. Chair, House Bill 4086 provides an additional 26 weeks of unemployment insurance benefits for lockout workers in an amount equal to the individual's most recent unemployment claim. Temporary lockout benefits are not to be paid if an individual qualifies for other regular unemployment insurance benefits or federal extensions, nor are benefits to be paid for weeks that begin after the week in which the lockout ends. The bill permits the retroactive payment of temporary lockout benefits to individuals in a lockout if weekly benefits are claimed by the individual within 60 days of the passage of this particular legislation. There is an estimated fiscal impact of other funds. However, after we've evaluated the other fund expenditure limitation for the Employment Department in this biennium, we don't believe we need to give them additional expenditure limitation, so it's being passed as is. And we do have three of the chief sponsors of the bill here who were planning to testify today before we do the work session.
And they checked in and said they didn't need to testify, that if we just move the bill.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay. Why don't you give us, there's a strike or something going on, the genesis of this, a walkout, yeah.
The history behind it down, yeah. There's some steel workers down in Albany right now that are locked out. There is one thing that's pointed out in the fiscal impact statement is that we based our fiscal on the current number of individuals receiving these type of lockout benefits. Right now, it's at a high. This isn't an instance that occurs very regularly. There is a revenue impact statement online in OLIS. They took the current high and projected if that continued to maintain forward and projected the impact to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. Given the history that this isn't a regularly occurring instance, we don't think it's going to have a significant impact.
Okay, questions? Senator Thompson.
Do we do this on a regular basis? This is education sub. I don't see too many of these kind of bills. I don't know what our chairman's doing getting this in our committee, so I don't have a lot of experience in this. Of course, he probably didn't have that much to do with this. But
you're missing
do
the
we
nexus?
Do this on a regular basis? Is this the first time we've ever had unemployment benefits for lockout? I don't have any history, so just like to know.
This is not the normal way of doing things. However, these workers are in dire straits with no income and not of their own cause. And why is the measure in this subcommittee instead of a different one? That's the big co-chair's decision. Probably they took a look at the makeup of this subcommittee and decided that it was a better match for this particular piece of legislation.
Follow up. So have we ever done this before as a body, paid unemployment benefits for a lockout or a strike?
We have done unemployment benefits for various circumstances. I remember especially back in 08, 09, during the Great Recession, when there was huge unemployment for many reasons, we increased unemployment benefits several times so that people would have food to eat, or money to eat and pay their rent. Yes, Senator Thompson.
I still haven't heard if we've ever done this before in a lockout situation or a strike situation. That's my question.
I don't know. Can anybody answer that?
There was some discussion in the policy committee, and I don't recall the year when they first extended the first 26 weeks of benefits. So this this would be the first time the state would extend it for another, for a full year in the history. And there is provisions within the bill that if for some reason it's determined that we, the state can't extend the benefits for a full year, and let me see, if we are uncompliant with requirements of the Social Security Act or the Federal Unemployment Tax Act, then the legislation is considered null. The director of the Employment Department is required to notify Legislative Council that such a determination has been made, and then from there, LC notifies the legislature about changes that will probably be
so probably
need to be made.
It probably hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
Senator Roper.
Two things. We do get, they do get the first 26 weeks like other unemployment already. That's part of the law. We expanded that before. This is the first time I think that the lockups have been that long, so they're asking for that. And also the Nexus education, most of these people, if they don't have anything to do, are actually going out and learning things.
Senator, you might move your microphone towards you.
But I actually, you know, and we have, as we all know, this is the end of the session, and some of these committees have already closed. So I don't know why the they determined it here, but the committee that might have taken this one might already be closed. So.
Again, I didn't ask for it. I'm happy to deal with it. It's an important issue.
Yep.
When their unemployment runs out after 6 months, they still have rent to pay and need to put food on the table for their children, and they're not working, not because of their own action, but because they're locked out. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe you said this, but it would naturally come out of the unemployment trust. Okay. So in this dire situation, pardon me, that's gone on longer than any other, apparently, not being on the policy committee and not having the background, is the governor involved? Is somebody trying to get a resolution to this? Or is it coming to the legislature to approve something to give some relief, more as a Band-Aid than a fix?
Well, it obviously has the support of Representative Olson, Representative Rayfield, and Senator Gelser. They're the chief sponsors. And I haven't heard from the governor directly, but I would think that this would be something that she would certainly support if we pass it, just based on her background and so on.
Mr. Chair, I guess my point is I would hope.
Do you want me to come on up?
Well, I'm not.
Why don't you guys come on up?
I'm not sure about the
questions.
I'm not sure about the tall guy in the back. I would, and you guys can hear my comments here. I would hope that.
Allow me.
I would hope that the governor would support this, but my hope would be that the governor or somebody would be getting involved in this, saying, why is the lockout going on so long, and try to get to a resolution. So, I mean, I get kind of tired of sitting here listening about Port of Portland situations and stuff that end up digressing to the point that it really impacts the Oregon economy, Senator Thompson's and my economy up the river, and can't move goods. And so,
I complain about labor disputes all the time, especially at the Port of Portland, and it is frustrating because it hurts the economy of the entire state. Could you gentlemen tell us a little more about the incident that's occurring in Albany and how this labor problem is carrying itself out and requiring this legislation?
And what's being done.
And whether the executive or anybody else is taking action to bring an end to this walkout.
So, Mr. Chair, Dan Rayfield, House District 16, and then we have Andy Olson, House District 15. Both Andy and I had spent some time on the line actually talking to the gentlemen who were locked out. And I think it's important to just kind of note, and I always say this, is that locked out workers are different than workers that are on strike. Locked out workers are folks that want to work but can't work during a labor negotiation where the employer has said, you can't come to work right now. We're trying to work out the agreement. And so in chatting with these folks, in Oregon, locked out workers are actually entitled to 6 months of unemployment benefits. I think it's critical to note when you're on unemployment benefits, you're only receiving about 40 to 50% of your salary. And so there is a lot of pressure on families where, I mean, in the testimony that we had in the Business and Labor Committee was very compelling. And so these folks are experiencing extreme financial strain, and they want to work. They'd be willing to work on the old contract if they had the opportunity to. They just don't get that opportunity. And this bill really applies to all locked out workers. This is one example in the Albany area, but this is not unique. It does not happen very often that lockouts go past 6 months. And so that's why the initial legislation extended it to 6 months of lockout benefits, because the locked out workers are just a very unique category of unemployed worker. They are somebody that wants to work, they cannot, but also normally you would be able to find another job. But when you're locked out, you go to try and find another job, and you cannot. Because when the employer, the prospective employer, asks you, well, are you going to return to your old job when the labor negotiations are resolved? Of course you say yes. That's where my benefits are. That's where I've got my retirement. I mean, I've been there for 20 years. And when you talk to the folks down at the ATI plant in Albany, I don't think I talked to one person that hadn't been working there less than 15 years. I mean, and these are the type of jobs that we all care about in our communities. And so they are kind of put in this state of limbo where they can't get another job. Yet they're only making 40 to 50%, barely getting by, and in some cases not getting by to the degree that they need to get by. And so that's how this bill kind of was developed along the way, where it's really locked out workers, not necessarily, you know, of course the ATI folks as well, but locked out workers in general are just very unique in an unemployment type category. And so their benefits actually expired, I believe it was, about 2 weeks ago. And so this bill is basically designed to address that going forward for whether it's the workers at ATI or in the future any other lockout worker that's in the same position where they can't gain employment. This is the type of benefit we want to provide. It's not like a traditional unemployment situation where we want to incentivize people to get a job. This is a point where no matter how many incentives you provide, oftentimes they're not going to be able to find employment.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand the plight, and I support the employees.
Yeah.
But do you know, is the governor or somebody getting involved? This is going on a long time, and it's going to start impacting the unemployment trust fund. Is somebody doing something to try to resolve the situation that you know of?
And co-chairs Representative Huffman, this is a national labor issue that's going on. And so that is, I don't know whether it's the governor's position, and I think she would have to speak for herself whether it's her role to play in kind of a national, labor negotiation. I think there's folks all different locals across the United States that are involved in this lockout.
Mr. Chair, this is the second national labor negotiation that Oregon's been caught up in a very negative way,
yeah.
And it's frankly disgusting.
Yeah. I would say, and I've dealt with this quite a bit in the past, the trust fund in Oregon is one of the most, or maybe the most solvent of any state in the union. It's really kept that way by adjusting the rate during tough times and then reducing it during better times to keep the trust fund solvent. Many states, their trust fund during tough times run out of money, and then they have to borrow from the federal government, and the federal government sometimes loans money at zero interest, which means good states like Oregon are sometimes subsidizing states that don't manage their trust fund properly. I'm very proud of the way Oregon manages its trust fund. It is solvent and hopefully will continue to be, even though we have to tap it a bit as required in this bill. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, colleagues, for bringing this forward. I think this is really important. And I would just, my understanding, I've gone down to the site with Representative Rayfield. We did a barbecue for some of those folks. And my understanding is that this is part of a strategy by the company nationally where there are 26 weeks of lockout insurance, that it is part of their negotiating strategy to hold out for the 26 weeks. And then once these workers don't have unemployment anymore, then utilize that as a significant leverage to, you know, to either break the contract or whatever it is. That is what I have heard from multiple sources about this. And that is part of why we are moving to do this, to help keep that playing field a little more equal. Is that your understanding as well? I'm not asking you to pretend that you are the owners or anything, but.
And Representative Smith Warner, I think that
Mr.
You can clearly. Representative Olson, give us your name.
And move your microphone over so we can hear you.
it's like he's a freshman or something like that.
You know?
Goodness gracious.
Representative Andy Olson, Albany. You're talking about my house district. Okay, thank you. So, anyways, you know, one can truly step back and take a look at it and say it gives that appearance of what you just described. The point being is that I think to some degree we as a legislature here in Oregon, anyways, for a lockout type situation, can give a message that we care about our families, we care about our workers, we care about our businesses. And this is kind of a stepping stone toward that message, the way I look at it. I support the bill as it is. I would, you know, I would prefer to have had the Dash 1 amendments. I understand that's not going to, but I'm going to support the bill, mainly because I care about the folks that are in my House district, but also Oregonians. So.
Okay. And co-chairs and Rev. Smith Warner, I think Representative Olson and myself have tried to focus on the actual the members of the local and trying to help them. There was a complaint that was filed. We have tried to, you know, and that's an allegation. It still has to be founded and things like that. And I think our focus is like been entirely on representing, you know, doing what's best for the members involved in the situation. No.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree. We do have a very healthy unemployment trust. The Employment Department was one of my budgets in another subcommittee for several years, and so I'm very protective. When Governor Kulongoski came after a substantial amount of that money for workforce training, several of us put our foot down and said, no, that's not an appropriate use. I think this is an appropriate use, even though I'm protective of it. But again, I just wanted to get some stuff on the record that I think there's a root problem that hopefully the governor or somebody is working to deal with. What we're doing here is a Band-Aid.
Okay. Anything else? Any questions of the witnesses? Okay. Motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
I move House Bill 4086 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Any objections to the motion? You objecting? Senator Thompson? Senator Thompson objects. Any other objections? Motion carries. Representative Rayfield, would you like to carry this to full Ways and Means?
Would be happy to.
And to the House?
Let
Olson carry it to the House.
Well, they'll co-carry, either way.
And Gelser to the Senate. It's her district, yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Appreciate your input. Okay, are we on 4002 now?
No, let us do 4076 next, and a couple items. The reason you had 4086 in front of you, the bill you just passed, is workload by subcommittees. The Trade and Economic Development Subcommittee had more bills than others did. So there have been some movement around. Those that are here for 4002, we are awaiting an amendment, and since we have to post it for an hour, we probably won't get to it here this morning. I'm going to ask the chairs if, when we're done with the next bill, to recess, and if we're able to, we'll bring you back to do that bill, or it will be up in capital construction tomorrow morning at 8:30, most likely. But so keep sort of nimble in terms of coming back when, if we get the amendment back.
When was it posted?
It has not, we have not gotten it yet, so it's going to be a while. Or okay. It just came in, but we also have to do, make sure we get approval for the amendment, so.
And that's
4002. So for those in the audience, stay nimble. And then, so if we can go to 4076.
Work session, open a work session on 4076.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill comes to you from the House Policy Committee. There is an amendment. Representative Johnson discussed this bill early on in the session when there was discussion around the distribution of Senate Bill 418 early on in one of your early meetings. Representative Johnson, he's here to describe the bill if you would like, or I can just walk through it. I'll leave it up to you. He's signaling, let's just walk through it. So this bill, as it comes to you, requires community colleges to provide support service for those students that are receiving Oregon Promise grants. It makes other changes to the Oregon Promise program, including requiring students to participate in a first-year experience, which I'm told is a term of art that's recognizable on community college campuses. It clarifies that students graduating from private schools are eligible for the Promise grants, and aligns grade point averages with federal financial aid to make it easier to administer. There's also reporting requirements in this program.
Senator Thompson.
Do you know what that minimum grade requirement is at the federal level?
I would. Mr. Brew is here from HEC, and I think he can answer that question better than I can, because I don't know.
Come on up and give us your name for the record and answer the question.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Senator Thompson. For the record, my name is Bob Brew. I'm the Director of the Office of Student Access and Completion in the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. So the term of art, as Mr. Wilson refers to, is called standard academic progress, and it's required by the Pell Grant and other federal programs. A student must be passing at least two-thirds of the classes they're attempting. Generally it's assumed to be a C average.
So more like a 2.0?
2.0, rather than the 2.5 that was in the original.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Chair, that's the components of the major components of the core bill. The A4s in front of you are recommended amendments. They take care of the financing for this. The bill originally had taken money out of the Senate Bill 418 Special Purpose Appropriation. In reality, it still does that, but we took out the section that made that action because the end of session bill 5702 will take care of. We're putting all the SPA management into those. It provides some clarifying language for the first year of the Oregon Promise Program coming up during, as we move toward the September implementation of that program, in terms of applying, so it's smoother for the students. It makes sure that HEC has the ability to make this as part of a grant, because the payments that are going to go out to community colleges are based on for a three-year period and for services provided for 3 years, so we need to make sure they have a grant authority to do that. It also deletes language about how it's supposed to be distributed to community college. The term equity is used. It's probably not quite the proper term to use. So the budget report in this will explain that the dollars, and there's about $1.7 million, a little less than that, appropriated in the bill, will distribute it to each of the community colleges based on sort of the major number of major campuses they have. And for this case, that includes each campus other than, or each college instead of, except for Portland Community, will be receiving one share. And since PCC has a number of major campuses, they'll get additional credit for those campuses. And so that means they'll sort of have three share or four shares. Everyone else, since they're much smaller, will have one share of the funding that goes out. And if you want, there's a number of services that community colleges are expected to provide, given this, some dealing with staff development and others dealing with assistance to students. And then there are reporting requirements that are added to make sure that the proper information is available in the timing manner. So that's sort of the summary of the -A4 amendments.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, $1.7 million, is that right?
And was, a little less than that.
Was that
1.659800.
Was that the original ask? I was thinking 0.5. The first number was 2.
2.5.
Yes, yeah, the original ask was 2.5 in the bill.
So the co-chairs adjusted it down. Yes. And wasn't this a part of the 6-point-something million that we had appropriated?
Yes, it
and
is.
So where's that? Maybe you said, and I apologize, where's the other 5.1-something?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, in the end of session bill, you'll see over $4 million of appropriation to other sort of transitional and support services for students in making that transition from high school to post-secondary education for
it's
other
all
things.
In education in some way.
Well, okay, so Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
The co-chairs were involved in the repurposing?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoffman.
Okay.
Along with recommendations by the work group that was set up for this purpose. And along with, in this case, Representative Johnson's, this bill was also part of those discussions.
Okay.
And Mr.
Go ahead.
One last follow-up, just.
Sure.
Since this is so much less than what we came into the session thinking might be allocated, I'm assuming the other programs are really, really worthy of the additional funding. And I just want to get on the record. I hope this is enough to actually accomplish something.
Okay, Representative Johnson, you want to come on up?
And we're holding Rep. Johnson personally responsible.
Personally responsible.
And Senator Roebling.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I was there too.
Representative Johnson, you know, the question is, we were asking for $2.5 million for this program, I believe, and it is scaled back to 1.6, a little less than 1.7 million. How do you feel about that? And do you feel like this will still be, worth doing, I guess?
For the record, Mark Johnson, House District 52. Good question. Yeah, we when we saw the email from Mr. Wilson, I think last Friday, that actually had the amendment, and it had the 2.5 million figure in it. I know that there were then some subsequent conversations with the co-chairs, who initially our plan was for, if in fact, I think in our informational hearing, we talked about using the AVID model as an example of what colleges could do. Not to require it, but say it's a plan that works. These components have proven to be effective. But AVID actually had provided a four-year build-out.
Yeah.
The co-chairs prefer to not go beyond the next biennium in terms of expenditures. So what you see in front of you is their estimation of what a three-year plan would be. The out year, the last year, as their plan would be implemented if somebody were to contract with AVID, it gets less expensive, so it does phase out to in the out year, there's less expenditure. So I'm confident that this can be adequate to at least get a good jump start to get some foundational elements in place at some of the colleges that don't have a real intentional program at this point. So I think it will be beneficial, yes. I wish it were more. I guess if we look at, again, I totally sympathize with what Rep. Huffman's saying here in terms of the Oregon Promise is receiving tremendous interest. We're going to have a huge influx of new students next fall. And as I told the White House conference in December, I said, you know, passing the policy was the easy part. Now we've got to make sure that these students are successful and that they get to completion, because if we don't accomplish that, we haven't really moved the needle here. So when we're talking about thousands of students, a $10 million, you know, tuition waiver program, but in light of the hundreds of millions of dollars that we spend on our community colleges, it's a pretty small little glitch or you know, infusion of money, but I do think it will be effective. And we've heard, and the OCCA's in the room here, and I'm sure they would back me up with this, say they're really anxious to get this money. That this is one bill where an emergency clause is really helpful because they needed to start implementing this yesterday. Honestly, to have some of these programs, because there will be some curriculum changes in terms of first-year program and stuff that these colleges need to start working on as quickly as possible. So all that to say, yes, we're thankful for this. Wish it were more, but we're going to move on, and we'll keep keep on. If
I will be back next session, and if I'm in this position again, I will certainly be wanting to take a long, hard look at how successful this has been and whether or not we need to add additional dollars.
Great. And just one other point I would make, too, as you all, I'm sure, understand, you know, the first cohort for the Oregon Promise was a $10 million amount of money that we put aside. That will get more expensive next biennium as we have multiple cohorts. So, again, it's incumbent upon this body to make sure we're doing everything possible that those students are going to be successful.
Let's go to Representative Smith Warner and then Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for being here with us. And I'm glad you're here, because what I wanted to ask is, so in the way that 1.6 is getting divided between the schools, I'm certainly glad that there's an acknowledgement of the greater number of campuses the PCC has. Mm-hmm. However, is it being divided evenly across the number of community colleges, regardless of where those students end up going utilizing the Oregon Promise? Is the idea that this is established, and it's a two-part question, is it that this is established in each of the schools and so it's an even split for that versus doing it versus there's this many Oregon Promise kids at this school and this many? And number two, will that benefit only be utilized for those students, or will it be utilized for the, I'm sure, many other students who could use completion assistance as well?
Representative Smith Horner, it won't be dispersed based on a student-based allocation. The colleges will get the equal amounts. Some of them already have programs in place. PCC has a program in place that this can be used to supplement what they're currently doing and maybe add in some of the other factors that they're not doing. What was your second question again?
Once those programs are established, who can use
there
them?
There will be benefits to all students. The first-year program is something that across the board the colleges are beginning, whether you're an Oregon Promise student or a returning student or whatever. It's just it's how to be successful as a student. So all those components, how do you take notes, how do you study, how do you, that kind of thing. There will be benefits across the board for all students. And the on-campus tutoring and mentoring services are available for all students and so forth. But
great.
Yeah, it's not exclusive, but it should benefit campus-wide.
About 30% of community college students in their first year actually go on to their second year, and we'd like to up that considerably. We think this program will help significantly increase retention. That's one of the main purposes of it. Senator Roblin.
So I want to thank Senator Johnson as well. The reality is that we have been working on getting access. I'm sorry, Senator. Representative Johnson. I have to say Senator Johnson so often in my caucus that it just comes greatly. For the last 10 years, we've really been working on access. How do we get kids to school?
Right.
We took care of that with Promise. Now, the major push around the nation, not just here, is completion. How do we get people through? It is my understanding, and I didn't get to be in all the meetings, but Senator Haas on our side, who's been working with Johnson, was part of the group that talked with the co-chairs to make sure that the entire 6.8 of the SPA that we had set aside last time for helping get this done will be spent on helping implement our the expectations of getting kids into school, which we did with Oregon Promise, and keeping them there, which is part of what we're doing here. So the other money is going to be spent that same way. That's my understanding. That was the agreement that we went, and they were talking to all of us. I don't know if they were over there talking to you, but I think there have been real conversations. There were other places. You knew we had a presentation here from the HEC about how to spend that money from their committee. The decisions were made to figure out what this one cost exactly for the biennium, not for the 4 years, and what can we do to make sure that these kids, once they get there, are being served, including the kids who are not necessarily just the people from Promise, but all of the kids. So I'm pretty hopeful. I agree. We need to watch how it's spent and where it comes back. Mm-hmm. But I was pleased with the conversations, the fact they involved all of us. And I also wanted to make a shout out for HEC and the completion, our group. I talked to a number of students who were filling out their FAFSA, and there was a little pop-up on the screen that said, "You are 90% complete with your Oregon Promise." And I thought, whoa! And they came and talked to me, and so they said, "So what's the Oregon Promise?" And so I explained to the student, and they said, "Oh, that's pretty cool. I probably should do that last thing." It was something like getting my parents. I don't know what it was. It was just some little thing she had to do. And she said, "Might as well do that while I'm doing the same thing." And I thought, oh, it's nice to see the stuff getting aligned so that if you do one, you get the other. And I was really impressed with the short turnover we've had to get it in place, that all the things are kind of starting to line up. So those kids in high school who are getting engaged at their high school level through Aspire or whatever organization that gets them into filling out the FAFSA and stuff are getting information which they may not have even known was happening, but hopefully we'll get everybody doing the FAFSA, which is really a big part of the Aspire program, because then they have options about where they want to go. Mm-hmm. They can go to 4-year, whatever. My early indication is it's not changing that going pattern. We're not getting those kids that were going to go to 4-year continue or going to go to 4-year. We are getting new kids that we're not as thinking about going to a 2-year. Mm-hmm. And talking to my community colleges, they're pretty excited about what's going to happen this week. They think they're ready, the capacity. We'll see how it all works out. So I want to thank all the people that have been working on this and the fact that we are using that money, I believe, in the way it should be used to help these kids get in and complete. So I will be watching where it was. I thought we might have just put it all in here, but they put it in other programs that made it work. So it was fine. And I'm pretty excited that they asked. They're making sure that it happens. And this program, and I agree with Representative Johnson in that there are a number of schools that have been working on this for a while and have come up with other programs. This bill never intended to say you had to do a particular one. Exactly. It was just this was one that does work. And I think it will supplement what they're already doing. And I appreciate that.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair, we need a motion on the A4 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move the -A4 amendment to House Bill 4076.
Is there discussion of the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? Bill's amended. Madam Co-Chair.
I move House Bill 4076 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Again, discussion? Any objections to the motion? Okay. That's adopted. Representative Johnson, do you want to carry this on the House floor?
Love to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Thompson, sure. Do you want to carry it to full Ways and Means and on the Senate
sure.
floor?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. And might I just add, Mr. Chair, that I just want to give my thanks to this nice woman over here for all of her service to this committee and to this body. And best
You're
wishes
welcome.
For a very successful future. Thank you for what you've contributed to public education in Oregon and to your state.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
You bet.
Thank you. I'm going to miss her, too. Senator Roebling.
Yeah, I want to concur on that, but I want to say I hope we're not – you can stay on and do other things. You know, you don't have to be a legislator to keep working in education. I assume you'll be there.
I assure you I'll be doing something with education.
Okay.
I don't know
okay.
what it will be.
Doug.
Other than I would recommend recessing, and we will take care of the 4002.
When?
We will be talking to the co-chairs in about 20 minutes when they come and have their daily meeting, and then it could be soon after that, or we'll try to do it. We'll just take a look at the floor sessions
Call
and stuff.
Call us all or
Yes,
something.
We will contact your offices.
Okay. Everybody hear that? Any questions? We are in recess upon call.
Okay.
Any more meetings after?
It's 54. Okay.
Good morning. We are back in order. as the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we are here to deal with House Bill 4002. And we have the amendments, and we have the hour's notice, and so
you're good to go.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4002 relates to chronic absenteeism. The bill directs the Oregon Department of Education to develop and implement a statewide plan to address chronic absences of students in public schools. We have also the amendment that we have been waiting for is the Dash 6. It also incorporates provisions of House Bill 4031, which also relates to chronic absenteeism into the bill. And that part of the bill directs the Chief Education Office to coordinate with OAHA, Department of Education, to design and implement a pilot program to decrease rates of school absenteeism using trauma-informed approaches to education, health services, and intervention strategies. The large change between the Dash 6 and what was proposed earlier this morning, which was the Dash 3 and the Dash 4, is on page 3 of the Dash 6 bill, line 10, which required the pilot programs to provide for at least one full-time trauma specialist. That full-time has been stricken from the bill in the Dash 6 to allow for hopefully maybe part-time or quarter-time. They'll figure it out, but hopefully that will allow the funds to be spread a little bit further. Because originally when the bill came to us from the policy committee, it had a $5.75 million appropriation. That now with the Dash 6 is a $500,000 appropriation for the pilot program. And then for the original part of 4002, which directed the Department of Education to develop a statewide plan to address absenteeism, that fiscal impact is estimated $25,500 for some contracting costs to have someone coordinate the entire plan. And we do have the appropriation. They are implemented or included in the Dash 6 as well.
And I will open a work session on House Bill 4002. And Representative Huffman and Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you and Mr. Wilson would be sorely disappointed if I didn't have questions or comments, right? Same concern that I raised earlier this morning for 4076 about the potential watering down to a point where if we're trying to do a pilot program, it would seem like we would want to fund the pilot program, and going from a full-time to possibly even a quarter-time, it's like, is it a fair pilot program? And I know I'm preaching to the choir here because I know the support for 4031 and the goals of it, but you know, I have an article that talks about the legislature likely.
Have you requested to use visual aid?
Mr. Chair, permission. Go ahead. You know, likely appropriating $1.7 million for stamps for voter registration envelopes, and yet chronic absenteeism, along with graduation and everything, is some of our very top priorities, at least in education in the state. And I just think we could do a better job of prioritizing, Mr. Chair. That's all I'm trying to say. I don't, you know, I know there are lots of important things out there we have to pick and choose, but at some point I think we need to go, you know what, this is really a big priority for us, and maybe we shouldn't fund this, we should. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the indulgence.
Representative Huffman, Madam Co-Chair and I asked for $2 million. We got $500,000 for two pilot projects to get this thing started. And I think it's better than nothing. It is a start, and hopefully if it shows a real difference in absenteeism, then that'll give me ammunition to get it increased significantly in the next session. Senator Roblin.
Yeah, and I concur, and I also hope that while they're doing this, and I think it is part of it, they'll look around and see, are there places where they've already figured it out? Are there schools that are doing a much better job than others?
There are.
And as I do know, there are. And can they learn from them instead of having to do pilot programs? Can they say, this is a pilot program. Let's go look at what they did and see if those are replicable? Because I don't think that costs as much money. Every school that I ever dealt with, you know, I was only in one when I was in my teaching career, but all the other people talk, this was always a conversation in our principals' meetings. Attendance is singularly the best determination of whether you're going to get through. If you're these chronic absent kids, they don't make it. So we've got to figure out what to do. And some of it is as easy as some of these are chronic diseases, and we've got to make sure we get engaged with a nurse or somebody that's getting them stuff so they aren't always behind. Because when you come back 10 days later, it's really hard to catch up, and then you know you're going to be out for another period of time, and so you're always struggling to catch up. We've got to figure out how to let them keep them going while they're not there. And I, you know, as a principal, I have a good friend who still talks about it, because when she was in school, she broke her leg, and she was and really badly, so they had to, her ankle, so she was laid up. And as a teacher, I thought, this is ridiculous. Newer parents, I just said, schedule a time. I'll come over and I'll tutor her to keep her going, because we're close to the end of her senior year. She can't afford this stuff. And, you know, people are willing to do those things, but we've got to make it institutionally. People know that when you're absent for a really legitimate cause, we're going to do something at the school level and help them. And I hope we can figure out ways to do that. And this doesn't cover tardies, though, right?
No.
For those people that get to these meetings late and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my tutor to kid.
We won't talk about tardies then. We'll just talk about the absentees.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is a subject that's been dear to my heart. My first bill I ever wrote was on student absenteeism as a legislator. And part of that was because of the success that we had in our school district, and that My plea beyond, and I shared with Representative Doherty, that the money that is currently allocated is not enough. If districts that don't have the staffing that possibly we had, or using staffing in a different way than we did in the past. But my brief story is about tutoring seniors. There was 1 year as assistant principal, and this is an awful statistic to state in one way, but the reality is I did 35 expulsions 1 year at Woodburn High School because of gang activity, and yet every one of those students graduated except for one, and that was because we made sure that we worked the plan with the teachers, and I tutored, the teachers tutored, and the biggest issue with this was the school board was behind us 100%. They made a statement. They were on the record saying, we want our students to be successful, and that's a big piece that, you know, public school boards can and should do.
Yep.
And when people complain to me about their school, I say, run for the school board.
Yeah.
Get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, motion. On the amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendment to House Bill 4002.
Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Madam Co-Chair.
I move House Bill 4002 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Further discussion? Any objections? Motion carried. Madam Co-Chair, to carry.
I would love to carry to full.
To full, and then Representative Doherty to...
Doherty and Gallegos
carry to
carry.
The floor of the House.
Mm-hmm.
And to the floor of the Senate.
Whoever wants, you or I.
I will be happy to carry it to the floor of the Senate.
That's great. So your first and last bill.
Could be.
You're carrying,
all
right?
All depends how many ponies I have
in the
final budget.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Or one of your last, anyway.
Thank you very much. Anything
very
else? Anything
it?
Else for the good of the order? This meeting is adjourned. My wife said, what are you going to do? You do. Adjourned. My wife said,